Good morning, down to brass tacks.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Now, first of all, I would like to say to being a Westbury-ian, I think Evan Waite, call me well, I think his name is Michael.
That's correct.
It's Michael, right?
That's correct.
I would like to say to Michael that I had 30 years fighting something called glaucoma. 30 years. Because my mother was blind in faith. And my father was blind in his left and weak in his right. So you understand that I had the full dose of the genes. And I remember in 1997 in America, they told me I'm going to lose my vision within a short time if I don't have an operation. And they wanted to operate on both of my eyes. And I told them, no, work on one now and let me see how that goes and then work on the next. I had what you call laser treatment on the left. And by 98, only about 6 months, I came here, it was only 5 or 6 months, I was blind in that left eye. So going back to the specialist and things, test my eye and things, and then about five of them, I had to see a cloudy. And before the take a good distance, I can't hear the conversation. I was listening, and they went to my mother history, my father history, the strongest medications I'm on, and right now they believe I'd be visually impaired for 3 weeks or months. I'm here to tell Michael that was 1998 and my vision leave me May 2015, 17 years after. And I'm telling him also that if I had listened properly to the specialist and not being the party man I am and enjoying myself, and taking my medication sometimes at 10, sometimes at 3, sometimes forgetting and taking that 8 in the morning before I go to work, I believe I might have had another fight for it. So I want my cook to know he has no control over it directly, but I believe he could fight it. So I want my cook to... It isn't easy, especially the thing to you, you're going to be visually impaired in 3 weeks. And I know it's not easy for him hearing what is going on in his body. But you got to fight it. I don't know if he's strong enough to do it, but I hope that he do that. Fight it, Michael, and I believe you might make another 5, 10 years. Fight it.
No, you... In all that you said, I think... where you are particularly useful is in talking to other people about taking medication on time. You said that if you had done the right thing, you believe you might have been able to add another 5 years to your sight. I think you need to speak to people about that because a lot of people fall into that trap.
Yeah, but I do that now. I speak to a lot of fellas. Even my son, I speak to him. Because the glaucoma is in the family. He might never end up like me because technology is higher. And he has someone to talk to in that past trick. And I particularly tell him, make sure you take your medication on a 24-hour basis. Don't take it at 9 tonight and 3 o'clock tomorrow morning, the next day, and things like that. Make sure that you take them, that the medication will work. Right? But I didn't know that till I met a lady here called Miss Governor. She is who explained all of those things to me. I didn't know it. I didn't know that. I believe I could have taken the medication anytime because I'd taken it. But the time frame is very, very, very important. Okay? Now, Miss Ellis, Michael, I tell you, man, I'm from Founders Gap. I can come down Rihanna Drive and look for you by the next 3 or 4 months. I tell
you're
you.
Very optimistic.
Yeah, of course. believe what I tell you, Mike. Yeah, Miss Alice.
Yeah.
I heard a gentleman yesterday, and when I speak, people say, I want to run stations, I want to do this in moderators, but I want moderators to be on top of the game. Because I find it to be on top of the game with certain callers. And then, now a gentleman calling, and he's strengthening his case about the fire station, and etc. And he wants to know, he's putting it over as, he don't see the big thing about the fire station close in the city, etc. And he went on to say, Biddy Bridgetown Plaza was in the backyard of the fire station, and it still burned down. I would like to say to that gentleman and listeners, if the fire station was right there and it burned down, support our fire station coming from the league. You know the place that I used to line, I didn't line their sense division, leave me. You know, all in that street might have gone. But because the fire station was right there, where the time factor comes in, only one building was burned. But if when the Bridgetown was started and that fire station, fire trucks had to come from Randview or anywhere that would take 20 minutes or 15 minutes, nobody know what would have happened in that area. So I would like him to think, and moderator should have corrected Mr. Eric Starr. Bam, bam, bam. But let me move from there. Let me go on. Miss Ellis, I heard a moderator again say that the fire station was planned to move since 2013. You know about that, Miss Ellis?
No, but I don't know everything.
You believe that too? And he said it to move because of the higher development. A moderator say that. The moderator also, after Mr. Glenn Murray came on and said that there's no plan in place after the national insurance is moved and the fire station and the mini, the temporary market. And he don't understand how you could be doing something without a plan. And the moderator read an article from Barbados Today letting him know that that is not true. A plan was made for it, and the Prime Minister of Barbados in July 2018 outlined that the bill would be pushed out and what would be done. So I would like to know if that plan was drawn when the Prime Minister was opposition leader, because she was only in power then 2 months. So I want to know where the plan was and when the plan was drawn for the as he said it, not me. This is what the moderator said, that a plan was there. And Mr. Glenn Murray, who believed when he speak about the Prime Minister, people has come after him, apologized for saying it. And Mr. Murray was right. No plan was drawn for that project that is expected to be done. It was too short, only 2 months. And I would like to say this before I hang up, Miss Ellis, because today is my birthday, and you know I got to enjoy myself.
Well, congratulations, and I certainly hope you have a happy birthday. I mean, is this something that you are celebrating in secret, or is this open to the boys to pass through and say happy birthday to you?
Well, I could tell you this. Last year, this time, nothing was planned. And by 7, all we had to light up the grills and tank.
I think I was there last year.
You were there last year too?
I think so.
Okay, so I'm saying I don't know, because I have some children and close friends. I got some children and close friends that is do things, you know, I follow. Well, because I think I did my part, and I leave all the rest to them. But, Miss Ellis, let me get to this one here before I move. Before I tell you, I enjoy my company with Mr. Stock on Wednesday. His was on Wednesday.
Okay.
You know, Mr. Stock birthday was on Wednesday?
Yeah, I noticed.
And you know I hang with him?
I didn't know that.
And there's not that moment when you will reach a stout.
I know that. I know that.
No, that moment.
He knows every joke in the book.
Every joke in the book. And you know who was with him too?
Who?
That I take a cake for when the jokes. The dog man.
Oh yes. We're in Norville?
Yeah, Norville. Norville was there, so you know it was being fun.
I need the mighty Gabby to call me. I've been trying to make contact with him and I haven't been able to do so.
He's too busy making me shame, being my friend. And then I said, the Honorable Anthony Carter, I heard him speaking on this issue with the National Insurance and the Fire Station, and I was very disappointed. And let me get to my point now about this.
Well, let me speak to this matter, because I like informed opinion when it comes to matters of this nature. I think what we have had from the Barbados Architects body is something that needs to be taken into consideration, the Barbados Institute of Architects. I believe this coming weekend on Brastat Sunday, we will have more discussion on this matter.
I love
but
that.
They have actually expressed the view in a 13-page document that it is possible to revitalize Probyn Street and Golden Square without knocking down the NIS building or the fire service. They are expressing the view, as you've seen in today's newspaper.
No, I can't see. I got
it. Other members of the public. So let me read it for you. It says, there is no need to demolish the NIS building. It can be made to very good use. The fire station as well. They both have historical architectural value, and the NIS building actually has other historical value to it in terms of when it was built and opened. The head of the body says, so I think it would be a loss to have those buildings torn down when there are valuable alternative uses for them. Now, I'll just add one more thing to all of this debate, though. The Hyatt people are required by law to have an EIA and a town meeting and all of that. Is that only for the private sector? I can't tell you that I remember the law on that well. I would think that any major development in this country, whether it is being done by the private sector or the public sector, should be held to the same standard. So if the government, even though it is a park that you are creating, one would expect that in the same way that the private developer is being asked to explain to the public what you're doing, that the government of the day should also be held to that same standard. So are we going to go through that? Or is this something that the government can just wake up a morning, somebody can have a brilliant idea that they want to go in this direction, and the rest of Barbados must like it or lump it, have no say in it? Well, if a private developer were doing it, it would be a completely different matter. I need guidance on this one.
Miss Ellis, you've had me on a little longer than I thought. But let me explain something to you. I like to go back. Because you don't add what to your career. About 5 years ago, I asked the news media, I asked the people in Barbados, how come that the leader of the opposition could say and do, and nobody questions her? It's worse now.
But I really...
No, listen.
Look, the very fact that the... Look, you guys... Let me just make this point, because you all...
Let me make
the point. I am saying to you that you are in this country busy trying to paint everybody with the same brush in Barbados. The very fact that the Barbados Institute of Architects will go forward and present a 13-page document that says we don't agree with the government of Barbados flies in the face of all that you say. It is not true.
And how
Yeah, but you don't. You want people to curse the government. You want people to curse the government the way you curse them. You don't have any time. You do not have any time, Alvin, for other people who raise serious concerns and question the government's approach. But they do, as long as they don't do it the way that you want them to, then they're doing nothing. It's not true.
Can I finish up, Miss Ellis? I told you just now, Miss Ellis. 5 years ago, there were the opposition 5 years ago, and I was with the media, not only with you.
You were speaking back then. You were one of the people in the vanguard of those taking on the Barbados Labour Party in opposition. Don't tell me that nobody was questioning it. You and all the people who were thinking like you were doing it. And you were using this forum to do it as well.
But Mr. Ellis, you can give me a little bit to finish. Let me get out of here. Mr. Ellis, even you directly, Mr. Ellis, I don't forget, I don't add nor take away. When the former opposition leader, now Prime Minister, criticized Chris Sinclair, I came to you demanding and asked you over and over, Mr. Ellis, why are you keep questioning the Minister of Finance about the defaulting? And we're not questioning the opposition leader, where she get her information from, and telling Barbados, hey, Barbados have defaulted, and I'm not apologizing because it's true. And up to today, the only body ever defaulted is her. And she never apologized, and the media never came down on her. She's in there.
May I ask you this question? Before,
like a sponge.
Let me ask you this question. Did you raise the issue back then? Did you criticize her back then? Yes.
Hold on a minute.
So what is the role of the media? The role of the media is only to actually criticize people
or to
create a forum where members of the public are able to criticize if they so desire. But that's part of our role.
Miss Ellis, can I finish up and move on? Let me tell you something.
We've spent so much time, but I can't give
you
anymore.
Let me tell you what I mean. I know it's my birthday, like you give me a little more time today.
Wherever you want to talk to me some more, I will come by you and, you know.
Now, let me finish this one, Miss Ellis. The last government that I, a member of the party, I didn't mark party government. I was the party.
Man, as far as I'm concerned, you were party government too.
Okay. I will tell you to say, study this, don't study me. Study the union, especially the president of the NUPW, that is a rebel now, and the leader of the Barbados Workers Union, that is a nun, and the media that was going after.
No, come on. You got fixation with the media, man.
Kill.
You have a fixation with the media. I think
kill,
you.
Tipping fee.
Alvin.
Everything the media was
Alvin,
going after.
Alvin,
election.
I want you. To just go through what is called some introspection. While you may ultimately have some point that the media might not have done as much as you wanted them to do, bear this in mind. That cannot be the be-all and end-all of why the Democratic Labour Party suffered the defeat that it did. You need to recognize that you had a mix of issues that contributed to that. And part of it was people like you who should have been telling the Democratic Labour Party the truth of where they were. But you decided that you would launch an assault against the media and everybody else. And that's why you helped to contribute to the defeat, the significant defeat of the DLP. Do have a great day. Dr. Brastatz, good afternoon.
Morning. Good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
Happy New Year to you and the crew at Brastat.
Thank you.
I call in to do something on the breathalyzer, but I normally do it a poetic way, so I don't know if you want me to go ahead with it or what.
Let me hear how you do it.
But before I get into that, I want to compliment my Prime Minister. I tell her whenever I hear, I say there's still hope for sugar corn, malt is real sweet. But,
Turn off that radio in the background, please.
Yeah, but the breathalyzer go like this. The breathalyzer go like this. We bring people from north, south, east, and west. I can't bring a simple breathalyzer test. These simple things that we take so long show that we have our priorities wrong. You know what I realize? That as barbarians, we are not as wise. We have a layback of the approach. You can't even ask the pastor, late Victor Roach, because I know he was the man over the breathalyzer test. Come, Barbados, let us be wise and prioritize our lives. So let's get wiser and bring the breathalyzer.
That is it.
But I have another one written on the knocking down the building, and we gave you a little piece of that. Say, the reason the Prime Minister wanted to lay down the fire station, because there's no liquidation. I just met your appetite with that one. I have more on it, but I'll do that another day.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks, hello. Welcome to the program. Hello. This person is raising the question here. They're putting it to Alvin. They want to know whether, they say, are you only able to toe the party line? The DLP did a roll of foolishness that helped put us where we are now. It sickens me to see how blind these DLP diehards are. If you don't wake up and look at yourself, the DLP will be doomed. So that's one comment here. This other person says, has anyone spoken about Owen Arthur's chairmanship of LEAT and Mark Maloney's membership of the board? This other person raises this question. I hope you haven't forgotten that the boss lady said to us, give me the vote and watch me. What else do you expect when it comes to the goings on with respect to the demolition of the old NIS building and the fire station in Bridgetown? Another raises the question of are these buildings equivalent to what is called listed buildings, like in the UK, whereby they are not to be demolished? A question, is there a noise abatement law in Barbados? I don't know of it, because if that is so, it would be honored in the breach more than anything else. This person also says, another person says, in addition to what your caller was saying about signage, I hope you can use your influence to propel the Ministry of Transport to make it a priority to put out ads on radio and more so on television as to the correct use of roundabouts, especially on the ABC highway. I fear with this Be Gathering initiative that there may be many more accidents on our roads if people are not taught the correct way of using roundabouts. And on that note, you should see the utter madness displayed by ZRs and minibuses coming from Sergeant's Village to the Life of Barbados roundabout from Monday to Friday. Coming down, Cullamore Rock this morning, there are some huge holes in the road. They are so big that two cars cannot move side by side, one going up and one going down. So more often than not, the cars coming to town, the vehicles coming to town, have to stop and wait until those that are going south or east, I believe that's east, going east, to let them pass before they can come around the big holes in the road. That is a real clear and present danger. There is no doubt about that. And it is amazing that it has been allowed to stay there for so long without being patched. Now, I could appreciate that the timetable for fixing the entire stretch of road may be some way off. But in the interim, there's an urgent need to do something about that. There are two of them. You know, one just in front of what used to be known as the Colibran building, and one just as you're getting into the corner to go around to Bishop's Court. I hope that something can be done about it. Down to brass tacks.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes, good afternoon.
Is it afternoon, David?
Yes, sir.
John Goddard.
Yes, John.
I might seem to be annoying you because I spoke to you a few days ago, didn't I?
Yes, but that's not an annoyance. If you got something to say, then I'm here for you to speak
well,
to
you
me.
Well, you know, I obviously have something to say.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, first of all, on a note of support the Prime Minister in her call for the CARICOM community to help Haiti to overcome some of its problems. I know it's very difficult, David. I'm a bit of a historian, and I understand the Haitian situation goes way back. It's so deep-rooted, it's very, very difficult to get the contending parties at the table to resolve differences. So I am not even going to pretend that I know exactly what should be done. But I think the CARICOM countries, we have a vested interest, David, in helping Haiti. You know, not only that it was the first black republic of the world, but it is a part of this Caribbean region.
The question is how?
Well, how do you help
a country that has slipped so far down in terms of what has happened to its institutional framework? What do you do?
Well, I think we have a history of democratic government in Barbados and in most of the Caribbean. And I think that the Secretary General of CARICOM is going to have to persuade the Haitian government to allow some representatives from these various groups to see whether we can help them build, they have to build from scratch, David, build some democratic institutions. And
who tells you that the Haitian people want that?
But this is what I'm about to say. That we have to convince the Haitian people that we have their interests at heart. Because I think they have grown suspicious, David, of people doing what they would call interfering in their country. So the Caribbean,
believe that democracy as we practice it and know it is something that they want?
Okay, it may not be as we want it, but we at least need to show them. Well, let us see if we can help them to develop a form of governance that is consistent with what their beliefs are. Because there's no governance in Haiti at this present time, and I refuse to believe that the Haitian people do not want progress. I would hate to believe that, David.
But they want progress. But you got to also take into consideration how a culture develops. I mean, right here we talk about some things that we used to do that have changed.
Yes.
And trying to get back there is so difficult. You're trying to take the Haitian people on a path that they have never seen in their lifetime. And you assume that because it works for us that they're going to accept it?
No. I'm not saying necessarily the system that we practice, but some system which provides for some degree of freedom and improvement in the social and economic lives. As I said, I would hate to believe that they're not interested in those things. There's some basics that I think people all over the world can agree on.
You know that we talk, for instance, about the fact that there's a middle class in Barbados, a bridge between the very poor and the people who are wealthy. However, there are people who live in countries like that who, when put to the test, would prefer it that way because they aspire to be part of that 1% that have the wealth.
Right.
Even though it is going to be difficult for them to achieve it, they live with the aspiration.
But David, you need to have leaders who have a vision and who are going to get people to buy into the vision. There are things.
How do you find those people?
Well, that is true.
And I'll tell you something else. There's the other side of people with vision and skill and that sort of thing. Human beings are fascinating. We bring strengths and we bring weaknesses.
Yeah, of course.
And sometimes the very strengths that we bring
can turn out to be weaknesses.
One day they turn out to be weaknesses. And if you have within that makeup people who want power, want to hold on to power and influence and that sort of thing. We have seen so many examples where leaders have decided that they were going to take things into their own hands. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that they've done so many things wrong, they still had supporters. But
David, you know the institution which I think can have the most influence in Haiti, but has never used it, in my opinion, wisely. The church. You know that the church has been.
You mean the Catholic Church?
Yeah, the Catholic Church. And I believe that the church must decide to play a role. Perhaps the church has said it too much in Haiti with the people that you talk about, that's 31%, who want to get wealthier and wealthier.
But the question would be why?
But the church needs... Huh?
Why?
Why?
Yes. You said perhaps. You're not saying it as a matter of certainty.
I speculate on it. I have enough... No, I speculate, David. I have enough evidence from my history, my study of history, to know that. The church has the Bible, which the church claims to be following, teaches that they have to side with the poor and the dispossessed. There's no question about that. So if you are promoting the interest of the wealthy 1%, you are not carrying out the Christian mission. And I think that we need to engage the church in Haiti.
You know that the church, in many instances, is concerned first and foremost with its own survival.
No, it can't be, David. Not with the church. It can't be.
Generally speaking, there will be exceptions to that rule. But generally speaking, the church has traditionally been concerned with its own survival.
And because the church has misinterpreted its mission. That is
human.
The church is not
nature.
Just a business church. It has to be a mission church.
I don't know that you can stay from Barbados and try to determine what's going to happen. My point to you is I don't see how you can stay from here and influence what's going to happen in Haiti.
I
assume that your next mission is to go to Haiti.
I can encourage the church.
You're a part of the church.
Right, I play a very significant role in church.
You're a big up, as people would say, in the Anglican church.
People say that, David. That is true to a certain extent. But the
so you can't spare head an Anglican mission to Haiti?
But we can do that. We can discuss it and think, because I am concerned about Haiti. Because I understand how any conflict in Haiti can affect all of us. You see, we get concerned about what is happening in the Middle East and so on because of the oil and that kind of thing, but we ignore the things right next door to us.
Well, you must be aware of the fact that a major increase in the price of oil will have an impact on
us. I agree with that. That's what I'm saying. I know that we are concerned about
a riot or an earthquake. Or a hurricane hitting Haiti might not have the same impact.
No, it might not have the same impact
as a 5% increase in 5% increase in the price of oil.
Yeah, we'll do tremendous harm to Barbados. But now, David, let me move on to another point real quick, because I don't want to keep that your program. In second, I want David to comment on the 1 or 2 million. I know it's what I'm hearing right now because Mr. Prescott said 2 million. The Prime Minister, 1 million trees to be planted. David, I don't know how much you know about trees. I think I am not a scientist, but nor a geographer, although I've done enough to know. You cannot be planting trees, David, during a drought. Trees need moisture. And I was fortified in my position when I heard Mr. Ian Gibbs yesterday morning, the agronomist on the other station, your competitor station, making the same point that
which one is that?
CBC Radio.
Oh, you know
they have a program. My camera is called.
You don't see them as a competitor.
I only heard it. You don't see the competitor.
No.
I can pass it for your stuff. But the point that I'm making is he is the kind of person that we should listen to. I am wondering whose advice the government took in embarking on this.
I think we were committed to that at some international conference. I think the United Nations is generally committed to that. But as you said, you can plant the trees. The question is whether they will live.
Whether they grow.
Whether they will survive.
So I'm concerned about that.
Our monkeys, perhaps. I mean, I don't know which. The other point is, what types of trees are we putting the emphasis on? Because this problem that we are facing with the monkeys has been traced to the fact that a lot of the fruit trees have been taken away, and as a result, they are encroaching on the areas where people live.
That is true.
So, I mean, I take your point. I agree with you that in seeking to fulfill the mandate of planting a certain number of trees to help with climate change, that we still have to discuss that in the context of what's happening with the weather, and
precisely
that we are in a drought period.
Yeah, and it's been going on for a long time. An associated point is that, David, I know the history of sugar, and is associated with slavery, so a lot of people are glad to see the back of it. But David, you know full well that the sugar cane has a number of important uses to Barbados. Apart from helping to protect the soil, it has aesthetic value, as you would know. But very importantly, it has a great impact on our carbon footprint. I don't know of anything that we grow in Barbados that makes a greater impact on its carbon footprint than sugarcane. And the next point, which is very important for the economy as well, every year we boast that Sir David C's place up there, what is it called, Foursquare Rum Refinery,
mm-hmm.
is voted number one in rum. But David, we are importing the molasses. I don't know if we can call it a rum industry anymore. All we are doing is importing molasses. Are you telling me that we can't plant enough sugarcane to provide sugar for us here, for the people who use it, because I use very little sugar, but for people like you that use sugar, and molasses for our rum industry? What is preventing us? I understand the argument, and I heard you raise it some time ago about the kind of price you get for sugar and on the world market. I'm not even talking about that. Because it's our fault that we concentrate on bulk sugar and didn't go to refined sugars and so on. But I'm not even dealing with that. I'm saying, grow enough canes to provide molasses for the industry here and to provide enough sugar for us to use in Barbados. That's what I believe we ought to do. All right? Let me share
this with you.
You go ahead.
The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, the FAO, Food Price Index, hits its highest level in 5 years amid strong biofuel demand for palm oil and sugar cane. World food prices rose for the third consecutive month in December 2019 as a strong rally in vegetable oil prices reportedly drove the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations Food Price Index to its highest level in 5 years. Some noise coming through from your end at points. There is a clear sign that sugar seems to be going through a revival in terms of its world price at the moment. Barbados has, over the years, whittled down the amount of sugar that it has produced. But I think we are also seeing renewed interest in trying to boost those numbers as quickly as possible. But of course, a lot of that has to be driven by the private sector. And it has to be done in a way that the private sector does not take advantage of the people of Barbados. Because the truth of the matter is that over the years, what you see is not what you get.
I know.
All right? And we have helped to create an environment of distrust, a belief that when people tell you they don't have this, they actually got something else up their sleeve and in their pocket. that they want to take from you as much as the government can offer, but at the same time, you get the impression that people start to feel as though they're being tricked. So all of that needs to be taken into consideration in trying to come up with an approach. Incidentally, let me tell you, they're telling me that it must be MTW, they're fixing this road at Colomer Rock. Thank heavens for that. Yeah. So as we speak, it is being fixed right now.
So, I'm glad to hear I agree with you on that, with that road.
Yeah.
David, quickly on the regathering, because it's a topical thing now. I wrote an article recently. I referred to the regathering study. David, if we are going to have this regathering, I know we've copied the concept from Ireland and Scotland and so on. If you're going to have that and benefit from it, because I thought a cost analysis would have been done even before the gathering had been told to the Barbadian people. But be that as it may, I'm not sure whether the government has a budget prepared for that and any what they expect to get out of it and so on. But David, we need every year we are told that our ease of doing business in that.
Yeah, you don't have enough time to expand on this because we've got to go to the news right now. So
right,
we're going to... Okay?
Okay. I'm just saying that we need to provide incentives for the people who we talk at home so that they can really invest. I'm not sure that people have the confidence out to invest.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Just let me tell you that the People's Cathedral Primary School is closed because of water issues. As a result, parents and guardians are being asked to collect their children or their wards as soon as possible. This is Down to Brass Tacks. StarCom Network News is next.